Welcome.
Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of it.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
There's some rich sports stuff that I want to get to with Bomani Jones this week, but I wanted to start with some of the things happening with the rap icons of our youth, somewhat, I guess. When you see what's happening publicly with Ice Cube, with Kanye West, with 50 Cent now saying he just doesn't want to pay taxes. Not that 50 Cent is from our youth necessarily, but Bomani, so tell me, as a music lover, as somebody who has studied hip hop, who loves hip hop, you make what of these three particular characters, because they're all three different cases. They arrived where they arrived next to Trump in three different ways.
Yeah, they're totally different situations. And I mean, you got to remember, James Brown endorsed Richard Nixon. Jackie Robinson also endorsed Richard Nixon, though in different elections, which is to say, people do interesting political things all the time. This isn't particularly new. What is new is that we got this feedback mechanism that allows people to hammer the folks who do this in the ways that they do. And I also think that it's worth noting that even though there was certainly a measure of disappointment toward Jackie, for example, with Richard Nixon, where he was disappointed in himself by the time it was done, we're in a different political era in the sense that if you pick up on one side of politics now, you are then required to pick up everything that's on the slate, right? Like that's just kind of how the game goes. Like I don't even remember why I was doing this, but I was looking up this old senator from Alabama, Howell Heflin. You may remember him from the Clarence Thomas trials. He was the super duper country dude that was on the judicial committee. And he was a dude who was in Alabama, but who fervently spoke on behalf of civil rights, for example. He was a big supporter of affirmative action, so forth and so on. He was also just as fervent as an anti-choice candidate. Like he was opposed to abortion in just about any way that anybody could come up with. And it was possible for you to be a member of the Democratic Party and feel that way, or perhaps be a member of the Republican Party and feel the opposite on those views. Like that ain't what the game is now. It's some real you for us or you against us type stuff. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just stating as a fact that that's where the game changes. So with Cube is in an interesting place because I think a significant part of where how Ice Cube arrives to where he is that basically he's kind of operating on a you can't trust none of these white folks program, right? Like people are looking at it like, yo, you got to throw your support behind Biden. He's like, I don't trust Joe Biden either. He feels as though, okay, I have these ideas. I offered them to both sides. Only one side answered. I went and talked to the side that did. I understand where he's coming from on that. Like, I think there's obviously some strategic flaws in doing that. But just on basic logic, I see where he's coming from on that. I am blown away by the audacity that it takes to be Ice Cube and decide, I'm going to come up with the contract for Black America. I'm going to be the one who does that. And I mean, I guess if that's what you decide that you want to do, but I haven't heard anything to give me reason to believe that Ice Cube is the dude that I need to listen to for any of these things. Like, I don't blame anybody who didn't call him back because he had a plan. You know how many people in America got a plan on this kind of stuff? Like, everybody say they got a plan. There's no reason to talk to him. Now, Kanye becomes his own situation because mental health is certainly part of it, which makes him very difficult to decipher for a number of reasons, and nothing he says about this makes sense. Like Cube says a bunch of things that I disagree with, but I don't look at him and be like, wow, this doesn't make any sense. Kanye doesn't make any sense to me. And there appears to be a significant amount of evidence to indicate that he's an op. Like he is working on behalf of the Trump campaign with what he's doing, which is different than Q. Q thinks that he can get the Trump campaign to work on behalf of him. Now, that ain't going to work, but that's what he thinks. Kanye actually works on behalf. The third one is 50 Cent, and I feel like anybody who takes 50 Cent seriously, that's your own dumbass fault. Like, the dude sat up, saw the tax rates, and did what a rich dude like 50 Cent would do, which is to complain about the tax rates. That's what he did. And he said, I'm voting for Trump now. I don't even know if that dude's actually going to vote. I don't even know if that dude was actually being serious. But I do think that people have a hair trigger to get mad at stuff, at which point him popping up and doing that, boom, is the moment to do it. But he is the most like dedicated internet troll in the world. There's no more famous internet troll than 50 Cent. And I am disappointed in how many people have allowed themselves to get trolled by 50 Cent.
The options are so bad for Ice Cube. They're so bad between just all these white people are going to do the wrong thing, so I might as well get the ear of one of them, that you go from bleep the police to where we are now, Trump side on the police. Like, how do you not factor that in terms of how it's going to look in terms of hypocrisy or sellout, or the fact that you came up on, like, bleep the police, Bomani, was Ice Cube. That's the anthem that made him.
Yeah, I would like for there to be more people to, if there's a way to interview him that isn't making him answer for stuff, right? Because I feel like there are a lot of intermediate steps to the point where he's arrived that need to be explained a little more. Because the thing that has actually jumped out to me when I've seen him in interviews, aside from the fact that he doesn't seem to be very prepared and doesn't really know that much about what he's talking about, but he looked weary. Like, when I saw him in the one on CNN, he looked really weary and really tired. And he seems, and this is my read from the fact that he fights so many people on the internet about this, his feelings really seem to be hurt by this. Like, whether it's right or wrong, he believed that he was doing something to be helpful. Like, he believed that he was doing something
well,
to
so
help black people.
Jay-Z would argue the same thing when stuck in the right. White power structure. Like, one of the reasons I find this so fascinating is because these guys get to the top of their game in terms of power, money, and influence, and then they enter the real game, and they don't realize they're being used as tools.
Yeah, but see, I think a difference, though, between Jay-Z and Cube is Jay-Z would probably make the argument that he's doing this for black people. But Jay-Z is always doing this for Jay-Z, right? Like, I don't think there's any move that Jay-Z's made that people have been critical of that there wasn't, like, a clear and obvious you're doing this for yourself and yet you're putting this in the other direction. With Cube, I don't think it's that simple. Like, you know, where the money comes from the big three and everything, you know, that's a thing, right? Like, I don't know enough about that.
I thought that's why he was weary. I thought that all of the lawsuits and stuff, when you're fighting, what is it? Is it Cutter he's fighting? He's fighting over money, lawsuits. I thought that's the reason that he's been beaten down.
Yeah, and it might be that, right? But I do think that when he comes up with this contract with Black America, he believes that he is coming up with something to be helpful. But the problem with that contract with Black America that he has, as I understand it, is he also believes that he is inventing things that have already been invented. Like, a lot of the things that he's talking about, for example, are already part of the Biden plan. Like, he thinks he's coming. He is not. And this is a very big deal when you get into this world. You got to be informed enough to know when the thing that you're saying is something that somebody has already said before. You know, like, this is the thing that you and I have learned in working in media. Like, you remember the first time that you wrote a column and you were like, wow, I'm killing them with this. And you find out that this column's been written 100 times before. Like, yeah. I think that he's, you know, like, I remember when I worked at Page Two, one of my editors made the point, or like, yo, I want to write a column about how college athletes should be paid. He was like, you know how many people have written a column about how college athletes should be paid? But I'm new to this, right? Like, I don't know the terrain. And so I'm thinking I'm hitting him with something. It's like, no, dude, everybody's done this. You got to do better than that. And I think that's part of it with Cube, is that he thinks he's got these ideas of what needs to be done. And he feel like he's the only person that's saying it. Little does he know, all kinds of people have been saying this.
How does he arrive there, do you imagine? Because I don't think it's just narcissism, ego, Hollywood.
Not reading. Like, not paying enough attention to the other people who are already in this space. Like, another story from Page Two that I think can be illustrative in this is we'd occasionally have people who wrote about sports who were not sports people. And they were always the people who showed up with obvious observations that were not obvious to them, because in their world, people don't talk about this stuff all the time, right? So Cube, maybe these things that he's talking about in his contract will seem mind-blowing to people who don't follow these things all the time. But then he brings it over to the people who are versed in it, and they're like, dude, you know how late you are?
Well, who in hip-hop do you respect for being on point there and on point there all the time? Like, is there – I don't know.
I mean, I don't think there's – yeah, I don't think there's anybody that's on point all the time, though, right? Like, I think that's a standard. That's a standard that people have to get off of. Is their expectation that every time somebody says something about this stuff, that they're going to get it "quote unquote" right? Right, depending upon whoever the arbiter is of rightness in that moment. Like, I don't really. It's like, especially current and modern, I don't have anybody I can really think of because the music doesn't really like traffic and go in that space in the same way anymore. But like, we go back and look at Chuck D. I bet we go back and listen to some of them old Public Enemy albums. You're going to find some stuff that you don't rock with nearly the way that you did at the time or things that you didn't notice. Man to man, the parts don't fit, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think there's a lot of people who rode with him at the time that wouldn't have been on board with it if it came back around. And now, especially the dudes that we know of, you know, who were famous, who were big at that time and that we still care about their opinions now, man. Them dudes have made a whole lot of money, and them dudes have done a lot of business with a lot of people whose political interests are absolutely not aligned with our own. And if you went back and listened to Cube in 2018, like the music he was putting out then, it didn't sound like a man that would ever go do business with Donald Trump. I think that's probably the best way to put it.
I've wanted forever for you and Mike Ryan to do a music podcast because I believe that the knowledge that you have across music is something that people need to be exposed to a little bit more, because you guys have thought about music the way that you're talking about, the experts have talked about sports. But before I move away from music into sports, I just wanted to clean up a bit of history that I did not know about. You said that Jackie Robinson had his remorses about endorsing Nixon. I don't remember that. What is it that you're talking about there?
Yeah, so in 1960, when Kennedy and Nixon were running against each other, Jackie Robinson endorsed Nixon. And it had a lot to do, as I recall, with Jackie's particular dealings with the Kennedy campaign, which was not good at dealing with things on matters of race. Like, the Bobby Kennedy that we revere, the Bobby Kennedy who came around in 1968 was not the Bobby Kennedy of 1960, for example. Like, they had some things that they needed to figure out and that they needed to learn about dealing with matters of race. In 1968, though, Jackie went in the other direction on Nixon. One thing that Jackie Robinson was very concerned with, as someone who called himself a Republican, was that the direction the Republican Party was going in the 1960s was going to turn that party into an all-white party. And if that's what they wanted to do, that's what they wanted to do. But this is what you needed to notice as what's going on. Like, Jackie used to work with Nelson Rockefeller. There's actually a great story in Jackie's autobiography about him meeting with Nelson Rockefeller, and they were trying to do some business with Reagan. There was the thought of that Rockefeller was going to deal with Reagan in some way. And Robinson, his autobiography, talks about how he was like, man, I just can't, you know, I'm not like Reagan. Nah, man, I'm not really on board with that. He thought that Reagan was a racist, everything else. And so he finally gets to this moment where he comes to toss a Nelson Rockefeller and say, I've got some reservations about working with Ronald Reagan. To which Rockefeller's reply was, yeah, he said the same thing about you.
That's a good story. I wanted to ask you about some of the things happening in college football, because I've been a little dismayed here as everyone has just gone back to business as usual. You know, college football is getting nuked here and there, but 10 million people watch Alabama, Georgia, even as, you know, Nick Saban tests positive, the University of Florida is testing positive. But we've moved away from the conversations that we were having over the summer. And I wanted to talk to you about what's happening, because I know you're fascinated by, in general, by what's happening at Iowa, Ferentz, the strength coach, and now a lawsuit for $20 million over racism. Like, what have you seen there play out that you've found most interesting?
Well, the thing about Iowa and the lawsuit, now, again, they wanted to keep Kirk Ferentz so bad that this dude oversaw a culture in a span of 20 some odd years that led to all the things that we found out. And never for a moment did they ever consider firing Kirk Ferentz. ever. Like, that was just never a thought. They're like, oh, well, Kirk can figure out how to turn this around, as though Kirk didn't have a vested interest in what it is. Like, they act like whatever that culture was before was not something that Kirk Ferentz was proud of, and not something he got patted on the back for over and over again. And then you find out, actually, it's kind of wild racist, what y'all got going on here. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, he'll be the one to fix it, right? Okay, so we got these players, and a lawsuit's been filed, and I believe the attorney on that lawsuit is also the gentleman who is suing in Tulsa behind the Greenwood Massacre of 1921. And they want $20 million for, you know, the hardship they dealt with. They want a fund to be established, you know, all these different things. And what I'm noticing about that is they put this out here and they said to the university that you can settle, you can deal with this, or we're going to actually file the suit. And the university said, fine, go ahead and file the suit. That is the kind of behavior that I feel like a side engages in if they believe that once that suit gets filed and more information comes out, that is going to be very much so embarrassing to the university. And they're telling them, you might want to deal with this now before you have to deal with this later. And the university just went ahead and said, oh, well, we're just going to have to do it. Now, I don't know what details are ultimately going to come out, but what I don't know is how bad the information would have to be that they would have in that lawsuit, or how bad the depositions would have to be, how bad the discovery would have to be, in order for Iowa to be embarrassed enough to feel like they have to fire their head coach. Because the thing about college football that can get lost, and this is something that I really came to understand with the Penn State situation when it happened in, 2011, 2012, all college football politics are local. Like, what America thinks about Kirk Ferentz doesn't matter. What Iowa thinks about Kirk Ferentz is what matters. And we've seen this, like the Urban Meyer situation, right? He was able to get by in Ohio. Like, nationally, it was time to fire Urban Meyer. In Ohio, it was not. And so we got that one last year, and then it goes from there. I don't know how racist Kirk Ferentz would have to be for the people of Iowa to say, nope, that's too far. We can't have this sort of thing here. I got no clue what it is or how embarrassing the information would have to be that comes out to the Big Ten, for the Big Ten to have to come in and say, hey, guys, I think you guys need to handle something. Like, what's going on right now at Wichita State with Greg Marshall, for example. That report, if they wanted the first report from The Athletic and from Stadium with Jeff Goodman, if they wanted to fire him, that was enough to fire him.
Well, hold on a second. Can you download people basically on the most interesting details? I don't want to assume that they know the Greg Marshall.
Oh, man.
Wichita
State. So Greg Marshall, he's the coach at Wichita State in basketball. So, you know, they had that undefeated season, and the year before they went to the Final Four. Greg Marshall held the title, and he still holds it. He is the best coach that nobody wants. Like, he was at Winthrop forever. Could not parlay Winthrop into a better job than Wichita State. And this is while he was winning at Winthrop, and everybody knew he was a very good coach, but he was a jerk, and everybody knew that he was a jerk, and nobody wanted to put up with it. Like, UCLA very recently tried to hire him, but they went to hire him in the middle of the season. He would have had to leave before Wichita State went to the tournament, and he didn't do it. But we have known for a long time that Marshall was a jerk, but he is on this list of guys, though, who is not simply a jerk, but also mistreats his players per allegations. We got one of him telling a player to go back to Africa. They got a story about somebody parking in his parking space and him jumping in his car and tracking the dude down and putting his hands on him for parking in his parking space. What else did we have on this? We got one of him putting his hands on a coach for not doing something that he thought should have been done, and all of these things. And this first broke out a couple of weeks ago, at least, when we first got the stories about it. But he's so powerful in Wichita. Like, I was talking to people who live there. I've been talking about, Marshall with them for years. And they're like, you got to understand, like, you know about the Koch brothers, the big political donors, that basically Marshall is on a level of power there of a Koch brother. Because, like, it's a basketball
state. Whoa, seriously? That, like, a Koch brother? Koch brother's the highest form of power, period. Like, that.
Yeah, I mean, he's coaching a team in an arena named for one of the Koch brothers. But that's what he means in Wichita. Think about this, man. They beat Kansas in the tournament. Like, for a school like Wichita State to beat the flagship school, not just any flagship school, but Kansas, on top of that, like, he is the man around those parts. And for what's gotten him in trouble is this. When they were in, like, the Missouri Valley Conference, you're getting different players than you're getting when you coach in the American Athletic Conference. And so they just moved to the American a couple years ago. But you're getting dudes that don't have no real options at Wichita State. And you can bully and push them around in a way
Why do we keep going back to there? Why do we keep going back to this place where, because Bomani, we've talked about this for a couple of months now, where the coaches are taking advantage of the most disadvantaged of desperations in a way of threatening to send them back to it. Like, how is this such a plague throughout this that results in a guy having Koch brother power?
Because those people who run this and fans generally do not respect the humanity of the players. Like, you've been keeping up with what's going on at Texas with the Eyes of Texas, the fight song situation.
Yeah, and that one's got to hurt you. The whole thing's got to hurt you because Texas is one of the few programs you actually care about emotionally.
Yeah, I do. But I grew up in Texas. I ain't been that confused about what it was, right? We just ain't really got no whole lot of better options. But for people who don't know, the fight song, The Eyes of Texas, historically, the origins go back to a minstrel show. And players have said that they don't want to stay after the game to sing The Eyes of Texas. It's a tradition after the game. Fans stay and sing The Eyes of Texas. The players come and sing it with them, you know, and everything else. And the players don't want to do it. And it has turned into this giant thing. And OrangeBloods.com had reported that where the big issue is now is that the black players made it clear that they were not going to do that. And the athletic director did not relay that message to the boosters. He told the boosters it had been taken care of. And then the boosters see the players don't want to stand for it. And now everybody's mad. And it's this huge discussion about, you know, you need to stay out there and show appreciation. The athletic director put it out in his newsletter. And like, whatever you, you know, as long as you know, these players appreciate this university, you know, and all this stuff and everything else. And the fans don't give a damn where the players are coming from. Like, this is just a song. You know, like, do you really care if the players are out there when you sing the song? The players, I think, have a legitimate reason to not want to do this. But nobody cares about their legitimacy. Nobody cares about them and as humans, and nobody cares about their dignity. They're like, nah, we want to sing this song, and we want you to sing this song with us, so y'all are going to be out here singing this song. And in the end, if you win, there is no level of mistreatment of players that fans and administrators will not tolerate. Like, I'm trying to think of who's gotten fired for mistreating players.
But they ain't even
while
winning.
Also
Texas
losing.
Texas isn't even winning that much. Like, Texas is not up to the standard of Texas, and you're okay doing that. Like, I don't, like, that is humiliating for a number of different reasons to make players who basically they're saying, we're not going to be out there singing your anthem. It's sort of the Kaepernick thing. Like, you can't be out here. You believe that this is from a minstrel show. Well, not only will you not disrespect our national anthem, you're not going to disrespect our regional anthem. You're going to get out there and sing, boy.
Right, which tells you that none of this is actually about the songs. Because, look, the reason that people like The Eyes of Texas, I mean, I've been working on the railroad, right? Like, it ain't even like it's some new jam, right? The reason they like the song is just because it's theirs. If they came up with a new song, people would sing that new song the same way they sang the old song, right? Like, there would be, because what brings you happiness from it ain't the lyrics, it ain't the melody, it's the fact that it's yours. But they not going to go get no new song just because the players say they don't like this song that you're singing. Like, that is what it really comes down to me. And that goes to everywhere. Like, again, think about this. We can name situations where players have been mistreated and a coach has gotten fired. How many of those coaches were winning? And there I can't think of one. So, like, granted, it was a player on another team, but Woody Hayes got fired for punching Charlie Bauman on the sideline, right? I also believe they won 7 or 8 games that year, and time was about up. Like, it was about time.
Does Paterno qualify? I mean, look at the nature of the crime. Does Paterno actually qualify? Yeah. Because everything that you said, and I learned so much from that as well, the greatest sports scandal of our lifetime there. But the way that played out nationally versus how it played out regionally and how those people were standing for a guy who oversaw a pedophilia and oversaw and enabled, whether he knew or not, enabled somebody who was a pedophile to do a lot of damage across a lot of childhoods. That one, to me, does that qualify?
Yeah, except, I mean, they were winning that season. But, you know, like, Penn State for like the last 10 or 15 years at that point would have a couple of blips, right? Would they be a little bit good? And then it would go from there. But they had long been like, yo, so how are we going to get this dude out of here so we can keep this thing going? You know, but even then, that was not about the mistreatment of the current players on the roster. It was obviously a mistreatment and exploitation of people. Like, I don't want to act like I want people to be clear. I'm differentiating here, not about how bad the offense was, but just simply who the affected parties were. But I'm really trying to think about this, and I can't come up with one where the coach got fired while they were winning for treating players badly. Can't think of one.
For treating players badly, Patino. I mean, there are no. Was Mark Mangino winning at Kansas? Just winning?
No, the winning had stopped. He won that one year, and then the winning had stopped. Now, and also, if it's going to happen in a lot of these cases.
Point taken, by the way. I'm not trying to find an outlier.
No. I know what you mean. But it actually gets me to another thought, is that it's going to take a player revolt, right? So, like, John McAvick, when he was at Arizona, the players went to the president and were like, yo, we've had enough of this. And then they got him out of here. Lou Campanelli at Cal, where everybody blames Jason Kidd for getting him fired, when in reality the president was in the next room from the locker room and heard one of his post-game speeches and was like, oh, no. So I guess maybe that'll be an example for you of it happening. It's something like that. But it took the president hearing it with his own ears.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense, everything you're saying there. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about as well was, I couldn't believe Bob Ryan came on very strongly on the radio with us this week and was so anti Dwight Howard. You and I were having, I thought, a good conversation off air about what a weird thing it is with Dwight Howard. What a rare thing where you get a guy who's excellent that people think is a clown and a laughingstock and deny him his Hall of Fame credentials. Bob Ryan, who knows a lot about basketball, scoffs at the idea that Dwight Howard is a Hall of Famer, and he's wrong, and I feel like he's emotional about it, and it's weird.
Yeah, most people, like, the thing with Dwight, and my read on this has been that the turn on Dwight came with that weird press availability with Stan, where Stan Van Gundy got out there and said that Dwight asked for me to be fired. And then Dwight comes in trying to do the thing that always happens in those circumstances where the media is pretending like this is a problem. Little does he know that Stan has just thrown him under this bus.
Well, he walks into, for those of you who don't know, I guess most people are going to know, but this is where it started. Dwight Howard, at the time, we were talking about Dwight Howard, basically right there with LeBron in a different time in basketball, right at the top of basketball food chain, defensive player of the year. Can you win a championship with him as your best player? And Stan Van Gundy is giving a press conference, or not a press conference, just a media availability, as Bomani said. And he says, Dwight has been trying to get me fired. And at that moment, Dwight starts goofing around with him. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead and continue.
Dwight starts goofing around. And then Stan, knowing damn well what has just happened, but Dwight has no clue, like, pats him on the shoulder and walks away. And then Dwight, and it's never been the same for Dwight in the way people perceive him. Then, as if it couldn't get worse, he gets traded to the Lakers. Kobe clearly doesn't want him to be there, right? Kobe, like, if you think Derek Jeter didn't do enough for Alex Rodriguez, who knows what you think about Kobe and Dwight Howard. And Dwight tears up his shoulder, says he can't play. Kobe basically peer pressures him into playing what I think it was a torn labrum or something like that. Dwight leads the league in total rebounds that year, still winds up getting called soft. But what did him in was, after Kobe has torn his Achilles, Dwight gets thrown out of Game 4 of the playoff series. And it's just all falling apart for him. He's lost it. And he leaves. And Kobe, for reasons I'll never understand, walks out of the tunnel and comes and sits on the bench. Like, that was it. Like, he was on the wrong side. Dwight was on the wrong side of the wrong people at that point. And since then, Dwight has been roundly disliked. And prior to that, you were either indifferent to Dwight or you liked Dwight. But I don't recall anybody, like, expressly disliking him. Then, years later, I started noticing where I'd say Dwight Howard was a Hall of Famer. And I wouldn't just get pushback from fans. I'd get pushback from people in our business who tried to make the argument that Dwight's got to do a little more to be a Hall. No, he does not. Right? Dwight is, what, 3-4-time defensive player of the year, was the best player on a team that went to the NBA finals. He did not have a career where he was dominant for like 15 years, but that's not the standard for getting into this Hall of Fame. It never has been. And I've never seen a situation where, and this is what you and I talked about, Terrell Owens, it took 2 or 3 years for him to get into the Hall of Fame. But nobody denied that he was a Hall of Famer. They just didn't want to put him. I mean, they put Morton Anderson in the Hall of Fame the year before they put Terrell Owens into the Hall of Fame. They just didn't want to do it, right? Like, they just made the call. They did not want to put him in the Hall of Fame. People make the argument with Dwight that he is simply not a Hall of Famer. Like, he was not a good enough player to be in the Hall of Fame. In 2009, I would say, and I said this at the time it happened, there was no player in the NBA, including LeBron James, that I would trade head up for Dwight Howard because he was that impactful. And keep it in mind, in 2009, LeBron did not make the NBA Finals because he was surrounded by bums. But Dwight made the NBA Finals with the second-best player was Hedo Turkoglu, and the third-best player was Rashard Lewis. And the reason it could work with those guys is because Dwight commanded the double team. The Cavs went and traded for Shaq after that 09 year, like the end of Shaq, because they needed somebody that could guard Dwight Howard straight up. And there were so few people on earth who could do that. And suddenly this dude is not a Hall of Famer just because people don't like him. It blows my mind.
It is crazy. What are you talking about? You're talking about a pretty dominant five-year stretch, right? Before 6-year stretch where you're talking about top two, top three player in the league by people talking about it. And then he hurts his back, right?
Yeah, he hurts his back. But even after he hurt his back, I think this is the part
he did lead the league in rebounding after hurting his back, which is crazy.
Yeah, he led the league in rebounding after hurting his back. And in Houston, he was not like the omnipresent dominant force that he had been in Orlando. But in the playoffs, like that year that they went to the Western Conference Finals, and I want to say they lost to the Warriors, Dwight was a better player in that postseason than James Harden was. Like, Dwight, for his career, has been a great postseason performer. It's like none of that stuff ever happened, right? And I think Dwight also got caught where a paradigm shift happened in the middle of his career where he wants to be a postman, and postmen don't really exist anymore, and they want to move away from it. But for Dwight, the way you show respect to the big man is to throw him the ball in the post, which he was never great at, but he was at some point good at. And then it gets to a point he's in Houston where he doesn't even get 10 field goal attempts a game because he's playing with James Harden.
Bomani, good talking to you. We will pick it up again next week, sir. Again, a reminder to the audience, The Right Time with Bomani Jones. Make sure to find it because it is exceptional listening. Thank you, sir.
All righty, man.